When I was stranded here last year in a snowstorm, I had an opportunity to learn with many of you. It was an unexpected but wonderful opportunity to learn with you, and I spoke a lot about tefillah. And after Shabbos, many of the Talmidim felt that it was very inspiring to hear about tefillah, to hear about the relationship that tefillah allows us to have with the Ribono Shel Olam. So I wanted to go one step further and speak about using tefillah to develop a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe Rabbeinu, in this coming week's parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu is told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, stop talking to me, stop screaming to me, Daber b'nei Yisrael v'yiso, v'yiso. Talk to Klal Yisrael and go into the sea. So Rashi gives us the context of that story. Rashi tells us that the Egyptians are coming from one side, Klal Yisrael's their back to the sea, and Moshe Rabbeinu is being mispalel to the Ribono Shel Olam. And he's davening that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should split the sea. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu a very surprising thing: this is not the time, says Rashi, to be ma'arich in tefillah. Moshe Rabbeinu, can't you see the Egyptians are coming? This is not the time to be ma'arich in tefillah. We have to save Klal Yisrael. It's time to get them to move already. Got to move them in. Finish up. Let's go. Let's go. You got to finish your Shmoneh Esrei. We're all waiting for you. There's a fascinating comment of the Maharal. Puzzling, troubling. Comment of the Maharal on this incident. The Maharal says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu kiviyachol couldn't or was unwilling to split the sea until Moshe Rabbeinu finished. That it wasn't that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Moshe to stop. He was telling Moshe Rabbeinu to finish. That's it, come on, let's go. Let's go, Sim Shalom, let's get to it. Finish up what you're saying. Because I'm not going to split the sea until you're done davening. And I don't have much time left because the Egyptians are right there. So I'd appreciate it, Moshe, if you would finish up and then we can get on with saving Klal Yisrael. It's almost an absurd statement. So there's a famous analysis of the Pachad Yitzchak in his comments on Pesach. And the Pachad Yitzchak explains why it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to wait till Moshe Rabbeinu finished. So the Pachad Yitzchak explains that had HaKadosh Baruch Hu split the sea, you got to listen closely, had HaKadosh Baruch Hu split the sea in the middle of Moshe's tefillah, you might have thought that the reason for the tefillah was to get the sea split. Moshe Rabbeinu is davening, please, pretty please, oh pretty please, oh okay, get split, Moshe Rabbeinu stops. You would think that the reason for the tefillah is to get it to split, and as soon as it splits, you stop, in the middle. If Moshe Rabbeinu is ma'arich, if he doesn't wrap it up, it seems like the tefillah was cut off by the geula. But the reality is that we don't daven in order to get a geula. We have a crisis in order that we'll daven. We have a crisis in order that... Did you ever wonder why when the Jews got to the Red Sea, it was a red light? I mean, others in the Red Sea. Why would you get a red light? It couldn't be a green light? Because Baruch Hu will split the sea anyway. So if he's going to split the sea anyway, why don't he split the sea before they get there? So they don't all have to panic. Why do they get there and the whole thing is blocked? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants them to daven. He wants Moshe Rabbeinu to daven. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, I'm not going to cut off your tefillah to bring the geula. Because the reason why we're here today is for your tefillah. Your tefillah is the ikkar. Now you can't daven all day. It would be nice, but you can't do that. So I'm not telling you, Moshe Rabbeinu, to cut it off. I'm telling you to wrap it up. Because I want everybody to understand that your tefillah was the most exciting thing. That, could you imagine that? Could you imagine coming home after Kriyas Yamsuf? And your parents say, hey, what happened today? And you say, Moshe Rabbeinu, davened in the Geshmak Tefillah. Wow. But that's the way we're supposed to look at it. We're supposed to look at the fact that Tefillah is there so that we can create a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that nothing else really compares to creating a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, there's a famous question of why it is that we have to pray. After all, there's such a thing called Schar V'Onesh. The thing is coming to me, so I should get it, whether it's good, whether it's bad. Exactly where does tefillah come in there? Why should I have to daven? And one of the rather simple answers is to understand that what happened comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I may be getting it anyway. I may not even be affecting, so to speak, what I get with my tefillah. But by davening, and there are other ways to understand this, but by davening, when things happen to me, I'm aware that things come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm open to that concept. There's a give and take between us. And of course, it's also based on what I do. But when good things happen and I daven, or bad things are happening and I try to daven harder, I get it. I understand his role in the system. Because even Schar V'Onesh can get lost. How do I know that? How do I know he's involved with this? How do I know he runs things in my day-to-day life? Tefillah is that daily connection. Did you ever wonder why it is that we are so needy? I don't mean the socially awkward amongst us, but you know, why is it that we as human beings are so incredibly needy as machines, as creations? Kadosh Baruch Hu created the human body as the most complex thing in the world, the human brain. Kadosh Baruch Hu made us and allowed our neshamos to be in the most complex machine you're going to find anywhere. But that machine is constantly having problems running. Constantly breaking down. And it needs a lot of things. One of the things that having such a faulty, although brilliant, although unbelievable, but faulty body reminds us, is that we're not the Ribono Shel Olam. Once it's a phenomenal idea that the reason why we're supposed to sleep on Shabbos is to remember that we're not the Ribono Shel Olam. That's the message of Shabbos. Not just a convenient day to sleep. There's one thing that truly separates the Ribono Shel Olam from any creation, and that is that as much as all week long we can do, we gotta go to sleep. Not so much at your age, but at some point you gotta go to sleep. You're going to fall asleep. And when we fall asleep, we're no better than anything else. What greater message on Shabbos when I'm trying to recognize that I'm not the one who can create everything than to go to sleep and say, I'm just a lump of flesh anyway. But there's another interesting way to understand that he created us so needy, because he created us in such a way that we need a lot of stuff very often. Think about it. How often, at your age, 18, 19, 20, do you need to eat? It's very inefficient. It's a very inefficient way to function. If your goal is to sit and learn, it's very inefficient that every hour and a half or so, you have to eat something. You have to drink something. Why is that? He couldn't create us in bodies where at the beginning of the day, we fuel up, we just plug in, and then we run for the rest of the day. Beginning of the week. Think out of the box. Histako bel raisa ubara alma. Kadosh Baruch Hu could have created us in any way he wanted. You'll excuse me, why do we have to go to the bathroom so much? I gotta leave the base medrash. I gotta leave the base medrash a number of times a day, however many times it's a personal thing, you guys can figure that out. Whatever it is, I have to leave the base medrash. Why do I have to do that so many times? What an inefficient system. Can't I just eat at the beginning of the Zman? At the beginning of the Zman, I should eat, I should fill up. At the end of the Zman, I should go to the bathroom, whatever it is. That's me. Why can't I do that? Why is it that my day constantly needs to be broken up by me fulfilling the various needs that I have in this body? It's because every time we have a need and the need gets filled, we recognize the Ribono Shel Olam. That's the power of brachas. That's the power of a bracha rishon. That's the power of the bracha of Asher Yotzer. If I wasn't hungry, I wouldn't have an excuse to make a bracha. I wouldn't realize that He's providing for me. Like the Gemara tells us, a mashal of a king. One time, he gave his kid enough for an entire year. So when did the kid come back to say hello? A year later, when he ran out of money. But if the king instead gives the kid enough to last for one day, the kid's going to come back every morning and need more. Rav Kirzner, in his Sefer on Tefillah, has a fascinating idea. He suggests that HaKadosh Baruch Hu cursed the Nachash with a fascinating curse. Does anybody deserve to be more cursed than the Nachash from Gan Eden? But what is the curse of the Nachash? The curse of the Nachash is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says you're going to eat dirt. Right? You're going to eat dirt. You're going to be on the ground and you're going to eat dirt. The reality is, I was never an animal. But from what I, you know, when I used to watch National Geographic and watched tigers attack other things, whatever it was, I don't think animals are primarily concerned with what things taste like. I wouldn't want to eat dirt. But if I'm an animal, I'm primarily interested in eating. We live in a society, in a world today, and with restaurants, things, we're mostly interested in what we're eating. We're not worried that we're going to find another meal. That was the history of much of mankind. Certainly the history of the animal kingdom. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells the Nachash, here's your punishment, that you're going to eat dirt, which is always available. If I'm a snake, that's a great deal. And snakes don't actually eat dirt, they eat whatever's running around there. I would much prefer to have my food all the time if I'm an animal. What was the curse of the Nachash? So if Kirzner suggests the curse of the Nachash was HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I don't want to ever hear from you again. Now, I've never seen a lion make a bracha. So I don't know what it means that the rest of the animal kingdom has this cycle like a human being of wanting and needing and it being fulfilled. But the concept is HaKadosh Baruch Hu told the Nachash, I don't want to hear from you anymore. You're set. Here, take what you have. I don't want to have a relationship with you. I don't want you to need and then it'll be fulfilled. But that's what tefillah is for. The Maharal elsewhere asks a fascinating question. The Maharal asks, we know, we're told, there are 2 days in the Gemara in Brachas as to exactly where the tefillos came from, right? One concept is basically that the tefillos came from the Avos, and another is the tefillos came from Karbanos. The Tmidim, but Karbanos. The Maharal asks a fascinating question in the Siv Avodah. The Maharal says as follows. We've always assumed when I daven shachris, I don't bring a korban, I daven shachris. Did you ever think of 2 things that are more different than davening and bringing a korban? What is bringing a korban? I'm some farmer in the Galil, and I decide I'm going to bring a korban to the Beis HaMikdash. So I take probably my money, I probably buy the korban over there, I take my money, my hard-earned money, and I leave my job for a week and a half. And I take this money and I take it down for the Beis HaMikdash and I spend my money and I buy an animal and I give the animal to the Ribono Shel Olam. That's bringing a korban. 2 weeks, $200, I'm giving everything to the Ribono Shel Olam. Now think about davening. What replaced it? Tefillah. Could there be anything more different? No, 2 weeks. 5 minutes. And not only that, not only did you replace 2 weeks with 5 minutes, but instead of giving things to the Ribono Shel Olam, what do? We ask Him for things. This is great. We trade it up. I don't have to give him anything anymore. And I don't have to take off time. I just have to ask him for things. How could it be that tefillah should replace korban? It doesn't make any sense. So explains the Maharal that it doesn't matter which direction it's going. But the idea is exactly the same. When I give a korban to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the message, of course, is not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs my animal. He doesn't need my money. He doesn't need my time. They do nothing for him. But they remind me that they're his. It's the fact that I can't say no. It's called avoda, like an eved, says the Maharal. Because I can't say no. It's yours. I'm happy to use it. As soon as you ask for it back, I give it to you. The message of a korban is to remember that everything is the Ribono Shel Olam's. And that's the message of tefillah. It doesn't matter whether I'm giving it back or I'm asking for it in the first place. I have to remember that he can do it. That it's his. And every little thing that I need comes from him. That's called a relationship. And the fact that I'm so needy, that I have so many things in my life, that my life doesn't stay the same, that one day is good and the next day is difficult, is a way of constantly needing to turn to the Ribono Shel Olam. Developing a relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. And it doesn't matter whether I'm giving it back to him or I'm taking it for, or I'm asking him for it. There's only one place to ask. One of the favorite parts of my day is in Shema Kolenu Shacharis. Shema Kolenu Shacharis is my moment with the Ribono Shel Olam. I'm not such a big, give me an introduction. I'm not such a big anything. I don't know what most of the words in the Shemoneh Esrei. I'm not connecting to most of the words in the Shemoneh Esrei. I get to Shema Kolenu at Shacharis. And I try to think, and try this. I try to think, what is it that I need today? And why in the world am I not asking him for help? Am I crazy? I want to finish my answer a little faster. Yeah, but I have a chance that he can make it happen. I have to stop myself because I'm going to keep asking for things. And then I'm going to spend my whole day trying to get him done. But in the meantime, he can do it. I was at a meeting. You'll find this funny. But I was at a meeting, sometime over the summer, I was at a meeting in YU. You may have heard that YU is having slight financial problems here now. Okay. So I was at a meeting, and they brought together all these people to try to figure out how to save the university. It was a fascinating process. Fascinating process. So, with non-Jews, the men, women, there's a whole big table there. We were all talking about what should the priorities be. It was a wonderful, wonderful exercise. Wonderful exercise. 9 in the morning till 4 p.m. 7 hours. 7 hours. Do you know how much staff time that is? 7 hours. Everybody's in this room together, and we're thinking, and we're doing, and finally, yeah, they're supposed to be like the head rabbi there. So I say, we really got to have mincha. So let's call this for a day. We're going to have mincha. So I got to daven for the amud, and we daven mincha at 4 o'clock. After mincha, I did something very chutzpah. I don't know what overcame me to do this. After mincha, I turned to the other gentlemen who were in the room. We had exactly 10 men. And I said to them, how many of you daven to the Ribono Shel Olam to help Yeshiva University? And they're looking at me like, what? I said, how many of you in Shema Kolenu said, could you give us a hand? Could you find us somebody? Nobody raised a hand. I said, what's wrong with everybody? We just spent 7 hours trying to figure it out, and it'll take them 7 seconds to solve the problem. Didn't occur to anybody. And it just happened to occur to me that day, which is why I said something. Because it doesn't really occur to us on a regular basis. We don't realize that he can help us so easily. So easily, he can solve whatever the problem is. But we don't think of turning to him. It doesn't have to only be in Shemoneh Esrei. It can be simply stand when I'm walking and I'm looking over my shoulder. And I say, could you give me a hand? Can you help me out? For years, I've been trying to stop myself from leaving shul early. I'm as ADHD as anybody else. And I have as much work as anybody else. And me, I'm also a shul rabbi in Queens. Between me and the Balabatim, we have a 6:20 minyan that's not early enough. It's clearing out by 5 to 7. 5 to 7. Nebuch, you have to work, whatever. So 6:20, 5 to 7, everybody's starting to leave. So at a certain point, I started saying to people, do you really think you're going to get to work faster by leaving 2 minutes earlier? Do you really think he's that not in control? If he wants you to get to work on time, 2 minutes. I'm not asking for a big miracle here. Do you really think that's where tefillah becomes the biggest test of our belief? Volbe writes in the Ali Shore that the biggest test for what you actually believe is in davening. There's no other mitzvah, there's no other thing that we do that challenges us lemaisa to believe. It didn't help me. It didn't help me until this fall. After the massacre in Har Nof, so it touched all of us very greatly. Everybody here was touched by what happened in Har Nof. And in a certain way, the world seems to have changed after the massacre in Har Nof. I don't know whether things slowed down with the attacks or whether Ribono Shel Olam said, I don't know. But I'm constantly pushing the boys in the yeshiva to say the world changed, but that we change. So I'm happy to say I actually made one little change. And I shared it with the boys in the yeshiva. And as much as I'd like to stop doing it, I can't bring myself to stop doing it. I said to the boys in the yeshiva, it's very hard to know how do you react to something like this? What do you say? What do you do? What do you think? I'm the last person to say, oh, this happened, so you see, the Ribono Shel Olam, I don't believe in that stuff. I believe it's true. I just don't believe that I have the insight to know what it is. But I said to them, you know, there's one thing that I know about the 4 people who were killed that day. There's nothing they wanted more than to stay till the end of shul. And they were killed in Shmoneh Esrei, they were killed in their davening, and they weren't given the ability to say the Shir Shel Yom. They couldn't finish, they're almost there. They couldn't finish the davening. So I finally cracked my problem. I can't leave shul early anymore. Because I know, in the back of my head, how can I, who has these 2 minutes, who is given another 2 minutes to live, how can I walk out that door when there were people who would have given anything just to make it to the end of davening? I still want to leave shul early sometimes. I just can't bring myself to do it. Because there are things more important than leaving shul 2 minutes early. And it's a question of having that relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of having 2 more minutes to spend with the Ribono Shel Olam. There's so few times in our life, so little time in our day, that we have to really connect with the Kaddish Baruch. And we run out of those. We're uncomfortable to be in a relationship with them. But we have to savor that. That's what our Shmoneh Esrei is supposed to be. That's what our tefillah is supposed to be. Time spent with the Ribono Shel Olam. You know, it's common to assume that at the end of Shmoneh Esrei, I know I'm supposed to take a couple of steps back. Right? So why do I take a couple of steps back? You ever think of how strange that is? The whole thing is very strange. He's more over there than he was over here. I'm done with the Shmoneh Esrei, so now I take 3 steps back and that's it. So we try to pretend. We try to make ourselves believe that he's a king. And if he's a king, we have to go through certain motions. We have to step into his office. We have to step out of his office. But if you daven well, if you've succeeded in davening Shmoneh Esrei, the way you should feel at the end of Shmoneh Esrei is perhaps a little different than the way you might have thought of it. I don't usually daven well. But when I've had a good Shmoneh Esrei, and I take 3 steps back, I don't feel like I left him in his office. I feel like he took my hand and he left the office with me. And he backed out in those three steps. That's only a really good Shmon Esrei. Often I feel like I'm done now, I'm finished, so take care, have a nice day. But the idea of tefillah is to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved in every part of our life. I should feel relieved when I've davened Shmon Esrei. I should walk into Shmon Esrei stressed out, and I should leave Shmon Esrei feeling you're there with me. It's not just my problem. I don't have to fix it myself. You're going to help me. I'm not alone. That's a good Shmon Esrei. When you kind of feel like you take those three steps back and you say, he's with you. He came with you. It's not your problem alone. I don't like taking night flights. Even though it's much better for the jet lag. But I want to leave you with one thought. And it's why I don't like to take night flights. Because after I read this particular piece in a sefer called the Aras HaTfila, I stopped wanting to fly at night. The Aras HaTfila of Uri Weissblum says the following. He says, how do I get kavana? You ever have this challenge of getting kavana where in order to make tefillah real, you have to be asking God for real things that are going on in your life. And then as soon as you start thinking about them and asking Him for it, then you start thinking about them and you kind of lose your train of thought. Happens to us. You know what's actually the worst thing? Rabbi Steinsaltz has in his Hasidur v'Hatfilah. Rabbi Steinsaltz says, the worst thing is when I'm so stressed that I can't daven Shmon Esrei. And I couldn't even daven for the thing that I was stressed about. That's dumb. It's one thing to blow the rest of Shmon Esrei because I got a big test, because I got a big Masmidim interview, because I got a big, I'm not feeling well, whatever it is. So okay, so maybe the Ribono Shalom gives you a pass because you couldn't concentrate. But how can he excuse you for not asking for the thing that you're so stressed out about that you couldn't daven? So ask me for help. How do we balance? How do we balance that? How do we create that sense that I don't get so lost in my problems in the middle of Shmon Esrei that I can't concentrate anymore? So Weissblum says like this. Unbelievable. Unbelievable idea. He says, have you ever taken off in a rainstorm? Have you ever taken off on a plane in the middle of a storm? See, a little nervous. And you're flying and you're kind of wondering, are we really supposed to be flying in this kind of weather? And you go up and you see all the rain and this and that, and then you get into the clouds. And then things are really dark. And then you're beginning to think, do pilots need to see to fly the plane? Because I can't see anything. And is this safe? And then there's that moment when if you're not flying at night, you come through the top of the cloud and everything is sunny. And the world, it's still raining down there. The storm is still there. But now you're looking down on the storm. And you realize that the storm is really not so menacing when you're above it. He says, try that at the beginning of Shmon Esrei. You're in the middle of the storm of life, and it's so difficult. And it's so hard to break away from the things that are going on. And then imagine yourself just going through that cloud, and then you're on top of the cloud, you're at the Ribono Shel. And you look down at the world, it's not so bad anymore. It's not so menacing anymore. Because you're there with the Ribono Shel Olam, and you're not alone. And you have that relationship with Him. And you talk to Him, like you talk to a chaver, you talk to a rav, you talk to an adon, or you talk to an av, however it is that you're relating to the Ribono Shel Olam at that moment. And everything's still there. And you don't pretend that you don't have needs. You do have needs, but you're not alone. You have that relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu that changes who you are. Tefillah Rabosai should be a transformative experience. The Kuzari Rabbi Yehuda Levi says that tefillah is supposed to be the pre-hayom, just like Shabbos is the pre-hashavua. we don't always have the most concentration. We don't always think about every single word and what the word means. That's not the base goal for people at our level. The base goal for people at our level with a Shmoneh Esrei is I should step forward, I should spend time with the Ribono Shel Olam. I should recognize that he's not alone. I should take his hand, Kiviyachol, and I should take 3 steps back. Changes my day. The Kuzari writes that between the tefillos, we should feel like we do between meals. Or the way they used to be between meals in the good old days in the Catskills. As soon as I get out of breakfast, I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to make it to lunch. I start inching back. So I make sure to be at the door as soon as they open the door at 12 o'clock. It's really that feeling of reconnecting, recharging, spending time with the Ribono Shel Olam. It's no wonder that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want Moshe to stop. Because there is nothing more precious in this world than spending a few moments with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I urge you, relish that time. We daven anyway. Relish the time that we have at the Ribono Shel Olam. Relish the time that you have in Shmoneh Esrei. Relish a daytime flight and spend the 2 extra minutes. Spend the 2 extra minutes at the end of Tefillah to remember that people who get it, people who really get it, would like nothing more than to spend a few more minutes with the Ribono Shel Olam. B'hatzlacha.